I'm Marie Bernard, host of Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. Join me Mondays at noon as we explore the universal energy that connects us all. Let's discuss our journey of self-discovery, joy, presence, and living with authenticity. We can create positive change in the world, and it starts within each one of us. Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. Mondays at noon on CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver.
Hello and welcome to Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard. Thank you so much for being with me today. There's a lot going on with me this week. Right after the show, I am heading to the memorial service for the woman who was my best friend in my teens and early 20s. And so please send love for her and her family. She passed away at just 35. And today I am speaking with Patricia Irwin. She is the author of The Wave Riders, The Creativity and Mood Spectrum. And she's also one of the teachers in my coaching course at Erickson College. So I'm super excited to have her on the show. And I also have Shelley sitting in on the show today. She is a new volunteer at CITR and thinking about getting her own show. So she may pass me a note or two here or there. And so welcome to the show, Patricia.
Well, thank you, Marie, and it's funny, I was looking at your website today, and I saw that beautiful smiling face of yours, and it just made me smile right away.
Aw, thank you, that's so sweet.
Sorry to hear about your friend.
Thank you. Well, actually, it really ties in with the topic of your book, The Wave Riders, because I'd like to give you an opportunity to talk a little bit about your background and where this book came from, because my friend actually suffered from, I'm not sure if it was bipolar disorder or some kind of mental health issues, and that led to addiction and sadly her end. So this topic is super important because I really feel like your book, The Wave Riders, is going to help so many people. So can you share with us where this all came from?
Well, started right when, I was being raised by a bipolar mother, and it gave me a real learning experience. It increased my intuitiveness in the sense of, for survival, you needed to know and be able to read what was going on. She was beautiful. She was intelligent. She was loved. Everyone loved her. She had a great sense of humor, and yet she herself often at times was unable to see it, unable to see any goodness in her world. And she would totally shut herself off. She would be this loving, funny, great person one minute, and then she would totally shut herself off into her bedroom, close the doors, turn all the lights, shut the curtains off. So I would come home from school, and I would right away open the door, not being sure of what that day was going to be. And, you know, so forgetting to bring the milk, you know, home from, on the way home from school could mean either, oh, no problem, I love you, honey, or it could mean, you know, getting something thrown at your head. So I laugh about it now because, you know, it's you just have to sometimes, right, to survive. And then I was on my own at 13, but I spent, you know, years really wanting to know how could I make her happy. Then I sort of went into survival mode for a little while, and then as I met more and more intelligent men and women who started coming up to me and saying, you know, I'm getting treated for depression, or I'm bipolar, or you know, I'm having some mental health issues. And I started to look around, and I went, something's going on here. I thought, this is either a really bad epidemic going on, and there's some sort of bacterial virus, or something else is happening that we're not seeing. And that led me to start to observe people as much as possible. I course went in for coaching training and NLP, and which is neuro-linguistic programming, if anyone doesn't know what that is. And that's just really observing habits and patterns within people. And so what happened was I started to observe it. I started to observe some of those same tendencies in me and in my daughter. And so I thought, I really don't want to be that kind of mother to my daughter, and I don't want my daughter to suffer. So what happened was I had a natural knack sort of interpreting things in a simpler way. And what I found was there were some really simple things that we were overlooking, some common sense things, and some just patterns that we weren't seeing. And so that's what the book is. It's a conversation around all of us having a duality and all of us having diversity and learning how to accept both those things and why it's important for the very survival of the species.
Thank you, Patricia. And you do talk about the, riding that wave of energy and how some people with depression and bipolar disorder, you're saying it's not necessarily something wrong with them, but if we can find a way to ride that wave and accept and maximize our potential when we're in that energetic space. And then, I mean, everyone naturally has ebbs and flows of their energy. It sounds like you're saying that your book is just about really tapping into that and rather than looking at people as there's something wrong with them, just looking at them as they're unique and this is how they think and create.
Absolutely. The waves, for example, can be different sizes. You know, they can be very spiky high, and we're high up into the energy adrenaline. It might be Christmas Day, and we really have lots of presents under the tree, and we could be way up in the height of adrenaline being released in our body. It's the same response as a stress response. It's adrenaline that pushes us up high, only we don't, you know, we don't flee, we don't fight, we don't do any of those things, but the adrenaline is running through our bodies, and we've almost all of us have felt that sort of adrenaline where we're almost shaking. And then we have the lows, of course, which is a natural response for the body. When you have that adrenaline response, the natural response for the body is to call in the parasympathetic nervous system, which really counteracts us and puts us into a bit of a low. So if you were on a really high wave for a very, very long time, you're likely to go into a very low wave for a very, very long time. And a simple thing sometimes as being able to recognize where you are in the wave and being able to say, okay, I've just had an adrenaline response. And it might be because you've got to get through a project this week, or it might be that your alarm has just gone off. It might be that you're in the shower and you get a really great idea and you just know that this is the ship coming in. This is going to pay all your bills. This is going to do whatever. And so you get that adrenaline response, which used to only come when we were under stress, right? But now we trigger it ourselves inside. And so when we trigger that, we go into the low, but the high is so pleasant that we never really want to leave that place. So when we get Christmas morning or we're going to Disneyland as a child, it's almost like setting up an addictive process, because what happens is the Christmas presents are there. Yahoo! We're excited. We got everything we wanted today. Maybe we didn't, but we got, hopefully we got everything we wanted today. We're going to Disneyland. That adrenaline gets set off. And the next thing we do is we spend the rest of our lives looking to achieve that adrenaline again, that state of when the adrenaline hits, the state becomes you think faster, you're more coordinated, you can see clearer. There's a lot of benefits to being up on that high wave. And why wouldn't there be? If you were running from a tiger, you would need to be able to do all those things, think better, see all the solutions all at once. But we never are in that state these days, so we don't release that, and we actually end up trying to stay on that. We become high achievers, and we want to always, always be at top. And then what happens when we fall into the low is we judge ourselves. Instead of saying, okay, this is recovery, this is restorative, this is reflective. In other words, if we were an artist who was always on the high doing really, really great work, we would never see the finer details that we do in the low part of the wave. Now, that's the point. Right there, when we learn that in the lower part of the wave, if we turn around and say, okay, this is restorative, we don't judge ourselves, we can then begin to rise from the low faster than if we start to listen to the negative words we say to ourselves at that point. I don't believe that criticism or the constructive criticism was ever meant to be put on ourselves or others. It was meant to be, put on our projects to say, how can we improve?
Wow, Patricia, yeah, I totally go through the same cycle, and I deal with depression myself. I've talked about it on the show before, and I do have, like, when I feel low, I judge myself. And even though I know, like, even my self-talk, I'll be like, okay, I know that I'm not supposed to judge myself. I know that this is just part of my personality and part of my energetic cycle, and that I will come out of it. But it's so easy to get trapped in that place of judgment because it feels crappy.
Yes. And, you know, and maybe it's even set up to stop you because you won't stop on yourself. So the brain turns around and says, oh, I'll bring it down. I'll fix that. And just turns on you. But more than that, I believe what happens is that when you stay on the adrenaline high for too long, you can burn out those happy chemicals. Mm. And so you actually don't have any brain chemistry left at that point to be able to stop that very easily. One of the tricks that I found, too, was that as you start to go just below the wave, you can actually schedule it. You know, you don't have to take my word for it. You can actually watch your own pattern and actually schedule, you know, okay, I've been up for this long. I know that, you know, I'm going to be down for a few days here or whatever. It's not that it disappears. The pattern remains. So a couple of things, a couple of really good tips there are, as you feel the adrenaline rush coming up, you know, I've got this great show to do today with Pat, and I'm really excited about it.
Of course.
If you take a few deep breaths, that will automatically bring in that parasympathetic nervous system, and you will start to calm the adrenaline response, yet still stay creative, excited, and able to achieve. That in itself helps you to not go so high on the wave so that the low doesn't go so low afterwards. And then as you begin to come down, you catch the first thought, the very, very, very first thought. So if you hear, who do you think you are? Right? That's the first thought. When you hear that, you have to turn around immediately and say, look, that thought has never helped me before, and I'm not going there today. Mm-hmm. And I know how hard that is. I'm not just saying that's an easy thing. But if you catch the very first thought, it's easier. If you allow 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 thoughts, it gets stronger. With every thought, it digs the hole deeper. With every negative thought, I should say, it digs the hole deeper. And so we want to try to catch that very first one. We want to try to have some steps in order. You know, things like knowing what it is that gives you pleasure before you hit that spot that you can do and switch around. So, you know, I'm not going to think that thought today. It has not ever helped me, so hit the road, right? Mm-hmm. And then you replace it with something, a good thought that does work for you. And then also look for the things that you know before gave you pleasure, even if they won't now. So for some people, it's a bath, it's a swim, it's a walk, it's a, you know, playing with their dogs, whatever it is. And don't expect, this is the other part, we expect that we're going to do that and we're going to feel good right away. But it's not really recovering from the low. It's not really like that. What it is, it's more like steps, right? So we stop the thought, step one, and we're coming out. And we do something that we normally used to enjoy, and we begin to climb out even more, right? So we just allow it time to come out. And, you know, and we laugh at it. I have had people get mad at me for saying, laugh at depression. But what I do know, if you don't laugh at depression, you are giving it all of your power.
Mm. That's very powerful. And when you were talking about the deep breaths and sort of calming down that adrenaline rush, it made me think of the difference between like eating a protein and complex carbs rather than like a chocolate bar. So you get that spike in energy and then you crash. But if you eat proteins and stuff, then your energy is more sustained. And the deep breaths with the adrenaline kind of reminds me of that. And then you mentioned catching that first thought and the first negative thought. And what came to mind when you were saying that is that there is certain, I mean, you mentioned an addiction to adrenaline. I think there's a bit of an addiction to negative thinking too, because sometimes there's a certain solace in feeling sad and focusing on what's wrong. Where does that come from?
You know, I call it in my book, actually, it's the pleasure of pain. And sometimes, you know, it's just easier to give up, right? Sometimes it's easier. And I use that word easier as, you know, with little quotations around it, right? Because depression is not easy. But sometimes it's easier to collapse than it is to try again. And there is a certain comfort that calls us, I think. And, you know, in the just wanting to curl up in a blanket and go, you know, lie on our couch and give up and say, we just can't do it. And at the same time, some of us are trained towards that, because when you think about it, well, for some people, you know, they stub their toe or they skin their knee, and that may be the only time that they ever receive comfort and warmth from somebody. You know, they might be very independent. And so people assume that they're okay. You know, they can do just fine. And so they leave them alone. And yet as a child, maybe we've grown up, you know, getting that comfort. And so sometimes when we get a little tired, we just really want, you know, to receive that comfort, the hugs, the just let the world go away for a minute. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, it can be very addictive.
And Shelley, the new CITR volunteer who's sitting in on the show today, she sent me a note about the pleasure of anger and hatred, too. And I did want to touch on this. I wasn't actually going to bring this up, but because it's so on the surface for me today and it's so appropriate right now, I do want to confess that, you know, the anger and hatred, sometimes it can be easier. Like, as an example, my friend who passed away, obviously when someone passes through, because of drug addiction, there is a lot of mixed feelings. And I was, the last year or so, we were estranged because of her behavioral patterns associated with this intense addiction. And it was very sad. And so there were a lot of emotions that I was having of anger and kind of like, well, you know, I felt bad that I hate saying this publicly, but there were thoughts and feelings of, I'm glad she's gone. Now we can all finally heal. And when I started writing what I'm going to say at her memorial and thinking about the times that we used to have when she was healthy and happy and bright and wonderful, it was so painful. I almost wanted to go back to that angry place because it was easier to feel that way than to remember her and feel sad. Does that make sense?
Yes. You know, you're human to start with. And, you know, sometimes it really hurts. I mean, and probably what shows up in the anger in you to start off with is how much you cared. But on the same note of adrenaline, anger and hatred are really tied into adrenaline. People can become addicted to anger and hatred because it produces adrenaline in our bodies. So there will be an adrenaline boost from anger that will make us feel better.
Yeah, I can feel it just rising up in me now as I was talking about
yeah.
it.
Yeah, and two, you know, addiction is, you know, like I said, the first addiction, I think, the birthplace of addiction, is that, you know, the first hit of adrenaline that we get. I'm not saying, and remember, I hope everyone knows that, I'm not saying that this is the answer for everyone. I'm not saying that everybody, you know, everybody's addicted to adrenaline. It's not what I'm saying. I'm saying we're just setting up, this is a conversation we need to have. We're setting up some patterns that we might want to watch out for. And so if, you know, we really like that feeling, and then we get a gold star and we like that feeling, and then we get, you know, something else happens and we like that feeling, and then all of a sudden life is not really you know, giving us those things anymore, then we might look for other ways to get that feeling back again. And unless we deal with things like this pattern of the wave and why things are happening, we may fight the addiction and recover, but yet go right back again because we don't understand what's going on within us. So addiction and anger, and wow, the one thing I learned was that an angry person on adrenaline, you do not want to confront them at that time. So let's say it's your spouse, and your spouse is bipolar. And I'd really love if the world would not get so freaked out when they heard the word bipolar. It simply means two poles, and all of us are there, but at different levels. So it's the level we need to watch, not the person we need to be afraid of. So if this person, though, is not aware of what's going on, what can happen is, in a family situation, is that the person is on the adrenaline, they're feeling low and tired, and so they start to fight or get angry. When they get angry, and usually they've overachieved for too long, so they're really starting to burn out, they get angry, and it shoots in more adrenaline. So the person who's talking to their spouse may decide right there to confront them, but that's what the person who's riding adrenaline wants. They want the confrontation because that is going to give more adrenaline. And so often, stopping and simply becoming neutral to the situation can often diffuse that.
Doesn't that, I find when I'm calm and someone wants a fight, it almost makes them more angry because they're not getting what they want.
And that's exactly it. So you're fighting the addiction.
Yeah.
Right? But you got to stay calm.
Okay.
Pass the addiction, right? Pass until they come down. So in that case, we don't really want to start discussing a new idea with them about if they have tendencies to waves or to ride the waves, and when I talk ride the waves, of course, again, they could be riding a smooth wave and be perfectly balanced, or they could be riding high peaks and low peaks. If you think of a heart monitor, and all of a sudden you see that peak really high and peak really low, and it's really rapid cycling is what it's called, going up and down, so that a person might be high on the high energy level and then an hour later hit the bottom. Imagine that. So over time, over age, we think we develop a sensitivity to it. So we can really go from the spike of adrenaline into full depression. It's amazing to see in a very short time, right after a conversation even. So with anger, what happens is that so you stay calm, so immediately they're not getting their fix, right? It's like taking the cigarette away, or taking the drugs away, taking the bottle away. And so, yes, they may get more angry, but you're not fueling it more in the direction of yourself, usually. Of course, each person's different. Mm-hmm. And the carbs, I just want to say something about the carbs. Absolutely, you are right about the carbs, the simple carbohydrates, the chocolate bar. When our energy is low, which is often happens to high achievers, they go so long always trying to stay in the achieving mode that they don't stop until that dip comes. And when the dip comes and the body goes, whoa, I am out of energy, the brain doesn't say, okay, I'm out of energy, let's do the right thing or the logical thing for the long term. It doesn't say, let's pick a good carb because this is what we need to do for tomorrow. It says, right now, this minute, I need energy. I need the fastest source of energy I can get. It might be anger, might be sex, might be carbs. And you can see that's where a lot of our addictions are.
Well, thank you, Patricia. It is time for a break, so we'll be back in just a moment. Right now, we are speaking with Patricia Irwin, and she is the author of The Wave Riders, The Creativity and Mood Spectrum. She is an international coach with an International Coach Federation certified ACC coach. She is an Erickson Professional certified coach and trainer. She's a master NLP practitioner. She is also an associate coach here at UBC. She's an author, a creator, a speaker, a trainer, and master of her life. She's a stock dog championship competitor and trainer, and you can find her at patriciairwin.me. That's patriciairwin.me, or at thewaveriders.com. She also has a book for kids at teachmetobreathe.com, and if we have a bit of time, we will talk about that. And just before I go into the break, I want to let you know that on October 26th and 27th here at UBC, there is Spirit Plant Medicine Conference on Visionary Healing Awakening Plants with an international roster of speakers. Again, that is October 26th and 27th here at UBC. You can find them at spiritplantmedicine.com, and they will be talking about psychedelic mushrooms, cannabis, peyote, all of those types of medicines and psychotropic natural substances. So if you are interested in that topic, you can check out spiritplantmedicine.com, and that is October 26th and 27th. I'm not advocating for peyote or anything like that. I'm just giving you the information because they've asked me to pass that along to you. So we will be back with more synchronicity in just a moment. Again, we are speaking with Patricia Irwin, and we'll hear more from her very soon.
How much do you know about bikes? Everything? Perfect. Nothing at all? Even better. At the UBC Bike Kitchen, you can use our space and tools to do your own bike maintenance, get one-on-one instruction on how to fix your bike yourself, or drop your bike off for us to repair. You can also buy a fully refurbished, guaranteed used bicycle, or a variety of new and used parts and accessories. The Bike Kitchen is UBC's non-profit, student-owned, full-service bike shop. We're located in the basement of the Student Union Building. Just look for the stairwell on the north side of the sub across from Gage Towers, or search for the UBC Bike Kitchen on Facebook. Stop by the Bike Kitchen and then get riding.
Become a friend of CITR and get great discounts on Commercial Drive and in other areas at
Bone Rattle Music, High Life Records, People's Co-op Bookstore, Audiopile Records, Bad Bird Media, BAM Merch Canada, and the Vancouver Music Gallery.
Wow, it sure does pay to be a friend of CITR. To find out more, visit us in room 233 of the sub on the UBC campus or go online to www.citr.ca.
Keep smiling, keep shining, knowing you can always count on me. For sure, that's what friends are for.
Oh yeah, I love braids. Did you know that they are coming to Fortune Sound Club on October 22nd? With guests 100 Waters and Kodak to Graphs. Tickets are available at High Life, Zulu, Red Cat, Beat Street and online at ticketzone.com. Ooh ya, just listen to that dog.
One way that old clunker is going to make you feel good again. Donate it to Bullying Canada. Check this out. Free towing or pickup of your old vehicle. A tax-deductible receipt. And a super easy process. Online at bullyingcanada.ca. Get rid of that old vehicle and feel good about supporting real solutions for change in your community. Donate your old or used vehicle to Bullying Canada today. Full details online at bullyingcanada.ca.
With the vast amount of changes happening in the world, it's almost impossible to get a clear picture of what's really going on.
We are trapped within the logic of capitalism, leaving us unable to imagine what comes next.
The Extra Environmentalist brings the perspectives of people who can see the whole picture and are ready for whatever comes our way.
Tune in to the Extra Environmentalist every Wednesday from 2 to 3 p.m. on CITR 101.9 FM.
This is the viewpoint that makes all places the same to you.
Welcome back to Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard, and we are speaking today with Patricia Indigo Irwin, and you can find her at patriciairwin.me, and her book is The Wave Riders, The Creativity and Mood Spectrum. And how I met Patricia is she is one of the teachers at Erickson College, where I'm taking my coaching program. And Shelley, who is sitting in on the show, had just mentioned about my friend who had passed away, and maybe I could reframe my thoughts of anger and, you know, to be glad that her pain is over. And, you know, I am. And I just hope that people listening don't think that I hated her or something. It's just, anyone who's dealt with someone with a serious addiction knows the cycles of pain and stress, and it's so painful watching someone do that to themselves. And whether it's a choice or not, I'm not going to comment on that, but you know, it is really hard for everyone to watch and to see someone that you care about in so much pain and I'm only guessing self-loathing, I don't know, but I just wanted to make it clear that I'm not slamming my friend, and I really am going to miss her, and I just brought it up to illustrate the point of how anger can be such a motivator and sometimes a lot easier emotion to feel than what really is, because anger is usually Patricia, you probably are aware of this with all the work that you've done in psychology and observing human behavior, how anger is really generally a secondary emotion, and it's covering up or coping with the real emotion that we're feeling, which is sadness or hurt or something like that.
And often fear.
Mm-hmm.
You know, fear that there's, you know, a lot of times we get angry at the world or we get angry at others because, you know, we fear that we can't have that, or we fear that we can't create that, or we fear that we're not good enough, or we fear that we couldn't help, or we fear that they can have that but not me. And when everyone realizes that they can have whatever they want when they put their mind to it, then some of that starts to disappear. You know, Maria, I was thinking on the break there, and I was thinking about one of the other points in the book that I feel is really important is that it's not just the bipolar spectrum. There's a mental health line between mental health and mental illness. And what I try to work with is to optimize mental health so we don't cross the line into mental illness. And that's what some of these things like deep breathing really brings into prevention on keeping the adrenaline high at a better level. But also there's other spectrums, you know, that are being compared to. The diagnosis of medical illness right now is massive. And part of that, I believe, is because we're putting so much emphasis on mental illness. And how that's diagnosed is by diagnosing, comparing what is happening with a person and comparing that to a normal brain. However, the normal brain doesn't really exist, right?
Yeah, what is the normal brain? That's like an idealized version, right?
Exactly, and it's an idealized version for whatever's happening at the moment, right? So, for example, Thomas Armstrong wrote a great book, and he was a special needs teacher. And in his book, he commented frequently about things like people in the past with ADHD were known as, or have been known as, hunter and gatherers in a farmer's world. So when we are all hunters and gatherers, someone with ADHD is perfect because they're seeing either the eyes of predators or the little round berries that are on the trees constantly distracted.
Mm-hmm.
So in that case, they're the normal brain or the better than normal brain, right?
That makes sense.
Move us into the farmer's world, and now we want them to sit and do, you know, basically sit in one chair for 8 hours, which most of our adults cannot do. Now, so to realize that each different brain has so much that it can offer, and I think that's where the problem comes, is not that we're, you know, there's millions and millions of people suffering mental illness right now. And they're saying it used to be 1 in 6, now it's 1 in 4, now some stats are going to 1 in 1 will suffer mental illness.
Well then, yeah.
Right, because if we're comparing all of these, we're trying to normalize a brain, and you know, survival of the species, if you listen to Daniel Pink talks about, in his books, he talks about how now, with a global economy and competition, we need more than ever to be having innovative thought. So wouldn't it be an interesting concept for evolution to give us brains that now think faster? Who are more creative? I'm not talking about just artists. I'm talking about creative thinking, like a mother who finds a new solution, an entrepreneur who comes up with something new. And if those brains worked on a different wave pattern, but the system itself was still set back in the farmer's world, would there not be conflict? You know, would there not be people thinking they're wrong and damaged? Would there not be people being told they're wrong and damaged? So that's what, you know, part of me is seeing too, is that each brain, I mean, there's a company in the States, probably more than one, but a company in the States that likes to hire people who have been diagnosed in the Asperger's syndrome, which is they're brilliant, but they don't always maybe have the social cues mastered, right? But in some cases, they'll hire them over other people because they are better at detecting bugs in software.
Mm-hmm.
They're not sitting around the water cooler, you know, chatting. So in certain cases, so each brain offers something, and each brain has a different bridge. So if you were, say on the bipolar spectrum, and you realize that you had that tendency, and you breathed it down, and you realize too that your tendency is to overwork and then have to rest more, you could actually find work that was related to the way that your brain operates, rather than trying to push your brain into a 9-to-5 job data entry.
Mm-hmm.
Now, unless you're really passionate about that data entry, you could have some real internal conflict going on because you're not really matching up that brain to what it is good at.
Well, Patricia, and it's interesting, you have the book for kids, Teach Me to Breathe, and that brings to mind, this discussion brings to mind how we're raising our kids and how these days, well, it's getting better, but I mean, we send our kids to school and they're all kind of forced to learn in the same way. And not everyone learns in the same way. Not everyone thinks in the same way. I mean, there's different personality types. There's different energy levels. There's men and women think differently. I mean, there's so many variations on how we learn, how we perform, how we create. And yet we're all trying to fit into this one box, and of course it's going to create frustration. And you had said how now mental illness is almost one in one, and that's so, rather than focusing on the illness, we need to be focusing on how can we stay well, how can we maximize our potential and maximize who we are as people and our unique abilities.
Right. How can we honor our differences?
Yeah.
And how can we also, you know the program that's out there, the commercial, Let's Talk About Mental Illness. You know, it's a great idea, but I don't like the way that they're still talking about mental illness. To me, it's like, let's talk. Let's say, hey, what are you good at? And hey, where do you need help? Right? Mm-hmm. But not with judgment. Right? And not by forcing help on somebody, saying, hey, you know, where do you notice that you're having some difficulties? I know brilliant people who cannot understand the written questions in exams, right? But they'd be judged by the written questions unless somebody could say, and they may not even own up to it. They might not know. They might just think they're stupid, right?
Mm-hmm.
But why not say, wow, you are brilliant in this area. So we're going to, you know, if you want to, let's nurture that area. What would you like to do with that? And then say, okay, now what areas? And we do kind of do that, but teachers are under such pressure these days that they have a really hard time doing that because, the program No Child Left Behind,
mm-hmm,
is an awesome thought again. However, what happens is so much pressure is put onto teachers to make sure that everybody comes up to a certain level that the patience level for a lot of teachers really lowered because now somebody who's different is a bit of a problem, right?
Definitely.
Right. Yeah. So really, you know, the book is about opening this conversation and saying, yeah, let's talk. But, you know, if we are one in one in, being diagnosed one out of one in mental illness, then something's really wrong, maybe with the way that we're diagnosing and maybe with the way that we're looking at things. And maybe this is how we're supposed to be. So the children's book, yeah, the reason why I wrote that was for fun to do it as well. It's beautiful and colorful and lots of laughs in the book, called Teach Me to Breathe. And the reason I did that is what I find as coaching adults is that often when we're succeeding, we don't want to necessarily learn anything about how to calm down that adrenaline wave, which is driving us to success. And so they often don't want to hear the words then. And then when they fall into the deepest low, of course, they don't want to hear the words then. So I thought, what if I could teach children to breathe through problems, to slow themselves down for bed, to recognize when they've overplayed? If I could teach children And in the book, the children teach the goldfish, Jolly Jay, the goldfish and his friends, how to breathe deeply, slowly, and when to breathe. And the beautiful stories that I've heard back about it is that kids are walking around not putting their book down. They're carrying it throughout the day. And the one that gave me goosebumps was that a young child, I can't remember the age now, it could have been 4 or 5 years old, was actually teaching other children how to breathe. So I had goosebumps and an immediate image of this ripple going across the planet and thinking, oh my, imagine if a whole generation grows up knowing it's okay, you're valuable as you are, even without a gold star. And hey, here's how we can breathe. And to calm those down and to know that naturally, imagine what their lives will be like.
Mm. That's so beautiful. So many people grow up as you, I mean, we've sort of been talking about this all hour, about not seeing our unique talents and how special each of us is, and people who fit into that box of what society idealizes often even they don't feel special. I mean, they're given all this external reinforcement, but at the same time there's an epidemic not only in I'm using air quotes mental illness, but there's an epidemic in just not feeling whole as a person, not feeling valued.
Right. And imagine if you grew up in the, or even now, it's not, you know, if we can do it when we're growing up, that's awesome. But even now, imagine existing in a utopian world where everyone is accepted for exactly who they are and actually honored. There's a funny story about schizophrenia. And in one country, see here, you know, we look at schizophrenia as outsiders and we're a little bit fearful of people with schizophrenia. And in certain countries, when a person with schizophrenia comes and starts writing on your sidewalk outside your house, they actually bring out more chalk for them because they're considered to be gifted. Now, remembering that there are top levels of schizophrenia and there are top levels of bipolar disorder and all of the other spectrums where they cannot function in a world, but I believe that we are starting to make people not function in the world because we're not accepting and recognizing the natural talents just because right today they're not valuable or we see them as not valuable. Because if you were, again, going back to the hunter-gatherers, so today, right now, we're starting to see that creative thinkers, people who can see, you know, vast ideas, but maybe cannot work them 9 to 5, those will be the top people that we need right now. Not so much do we need the people, as termed by somebody else, that can take a brick from one location to another location without ever questioning how. If you're building pyramids, you don't want somebody who's saying, well, really, can't we move this brick in a different way? Right? So whatever it is that's valued now, what happens when it's no longer valued? We would be stepping into, now, you're not matching up. Your particular gift would be considered as a disability.
So, Patricia, what do we do about this? You'd mentioned about the breathing. What other things can we do to ride this wave and find our, embrace our uniqueness and take care of our mental health?
Well, awareness is one thing that's really, really top of my list, because just being aware of that there is a wave, that going into a low is actually a normal thing. It's when we give it so much weight that we push it farther into depression, heavy, heavy depression, that it becomes a problem. But if we can learn to, you know, breathe down the high so we don't go quite so low, catch that first negative thought, and learn to say, okay, you know what, body, I accept you right now, and I know, first you stop that negative thought, I know what you need. I'm going to honor you, my mind and my body, for having supplied all this to me, and I'm going to give you what I know that will nurture you now. And that might be, you know, nutrition, it might be exercise, might be all of these things that we already sort of know about. But there's lots of little fun things that we can do that we don't think about. You know, Wayne Dyer said that if you do an act of kindness to someone, you receive serotonin, which is what we know as our happy chemical, we'll call it. So you receive a hit of serotonin, and your immune system receives a boost. So doing an act of kindness will give you free serotonin without a prescription. Mm-hmm. Now, not only that, the fun little thing about that is not only that, but the person who receives the act of kindness also gets a hit of serotonin and a boost of immune system. And the person observing you doing that act of kindness also gets the serotonin and the immunity. Isn't that fun?
Mm-hmm. It's actually...
sounds silly, but, you know, there's lots of other studies that have gone on now. And some things like, you know, really honoring that white space on your calendar is precious, and that when you find white space on your calendar, you're not achieving or producing that day, that on that day, standing perfectly still, you have value. And learning that, I work with a lot of people now who white space like that gives them feelings of guilt, and they start to feel that they're lazy.
Yeah. I don't know what to do with myself.
Helping our children to understand that white space, let's learn white space. Let's learn when to have white space in there so that we're not bringing in these negative feelings. Mm. Another one is, there's a study been done, which is really fun, on using our hands for survival. So the more that we delegate and send, you know, hire people to go out and do our garden or raise our tomatoes or wash our dishes or whatever it is, the more that we don't do that ourselves, we're actually robbing ourselves of a little gift. The gift is that if you do something for survival and using your hands, you get a boost of serotonin.
Hmm.
So if you're out gardening, and if you're out gardening with your children and you're you know, chopping vegetables or whatever that is actually been shown to give you that boost of serotonin. So that's going to make you feel better as well.
Awesome.
There's a new thing, too, that is out for, it's called the new PE, and it's in the States. And actually, there's a bit of this in Canada as well. And what it is they've totally turned around sports training and PE. They still do that, but their main focus is on lifelong fitness. So a couple of studies found a few things. In Canada, they put treadmills in the math class. And they found that using the treadmills in the math class, children with ADHD were able to study and to learn. The other part was they were focusing on aerobic exercise before the difficult classes like math, rather than increasing Ritalin use to medicate children to sit still on that desk, where they're letting out the energy, shouting, screaming, running, getting the aerobic activity before the classes. Now, this one type of PE that they're doing before even school starts, and these guys are getting top academic marks. Before PE, the children sign up, they come and they get a heart monitor, and they get an A if they show improvement in their fitness. They can choose whichever fitness activity it is, and they are allowed to just monitor and show that they've increased their ability. And so with this, what we develop now, think of the future generation of that, what we develop now are people who feel good about themselves and who have lifelong fitness rather than being the last person running in a running class.
Mm-hmm.
In PE, or standing around waiting and watching the people who are really good at basketball or volleyball. Instead of that, we're honoring and just saying, you know what? What is it that you will carry with you throughout your lifetime? Is it going to be that sport? For some people, it is. But for lifelong fitness is something that people do carry throughout their life or seek as they age, right?
That's awesome. Well, Pat, it's we have just a few minutes left in the show. I want to put out your website again. It is thewaveriders.com, and you can find Patricia Irwin at patriciairwin.me. And she is the author of The Wave Riders, The Creativity and Mood Spectrum, as well as the children's book we were just talking about, which is Teach Me to Breathe. And you can find that at teachmetobreathe.com as well. And coming up in just a few minutes here on CITR is Parts Unknown. And I just want to also mention that you may be listening
in Kamloops at CFBX, or in Nova Scotia at Axe Radio Canada, or online at CITR.ca, CosmicDimensions.com, EmpowerRadio.com, or on the Co-Creator Network. I forgot to mention that at the beginning of the hour. And so we just have a few minutes left in this show. Patricia, what would you like to focus on for the last few minutes?
Well, I think that if I could leave the message that for us to not to be so quick to judge ourselves so harshly, if we can accept that we operate in different ways and honor that way and really look for the patterns. And, you know, I didn't mention too, Marie, I started a program online, actually, an online WebEx teaching environment for moving mood. And so that's available on that website, too. And so if we can learn to recognize our patterns, to look for what we need, not be afraid to ask about it, not be afraid to talk about it, we're not talking. Let's not talk mental illness. Let's talk about optimizing mental health and, you know, really honoring. And for anyone who happens to be in deep, deep, deep depression right now, you know, I'm not a therapist or a doctor. I can't diagnose. But what I can say is what I have learned through the years, and that is to, for now is not the time for thinking. When we give the depression that power, all we can do is do the little steps that allow us, that we know from experience, give us feelings that help us. Like when you take a walk, you might not feel it today. You might feel, you might take that walk. By the way, studies have shown 13.9 degrees Celsius is optimal for happiness when you're doing your exercise, and 7 minutes might even be enough. But when you go out there, don't expect maybe right today to have that feeling. Remember its steps. They're little stepping stones to come back to the middle of the wave. And don't stay in the low of depression, waiting until the hit of adrenaline shoots you sky high again. Because the sky high looks like it is the most exciting part of life, but really it's not. That's a false sort of chemical sort of illusion that happens there. When we breathe ourselves down, it's not boring there. The low depression is. When we breathe ourselves down, we actually find the best of us. I've had readers come up with me and say, you know what, over 60 years I never knew myself, and now I know who I am and what drives me. And so, Marie, if that message gets out, that's fabulous.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show, Patricia. And again, the website is thewaveriders.com, and that mood club, that mood class is on that website, thewaveriders.com?
Yes, it is. And remember to put the word "the" in front of it on the website, because waveriders.com is a band. I couldn't get that domain.
Okay, so it's thewaveriders.com. And you can also find Patricia at patriciairwin.me. And I just wanted to say I'm going to see you tonight in the last class of module one for my coaching course at Erickson College. So I'm looking forward to that. Thank you so much. And is there anything else that you'd like to add before we close the show?
Well, I'm just so super happy to be here, and I've just really enjoyed being here with you, Marie, and I am open to coming back anytime you want me to.
Yay! Well, thank you so much for being on the show. It's been such a pleasure speaking with you, and I'll talk with you again tonight.
Thank you, and big hugs for your session after this.
Thank you. I hope it didn't come across like I was...
I honor you for being open, because you're not the only person who ever thinks like that.
Well, I know, and that's why I felt like it was important to say it, because I know that the guilt associated with those mixed feelings, and whenever there's conflict in a relationship and someone passes, there's always...
Yeah, and just remember, too, it's a knee-jerk reaction, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's great that we all work towards spirituality and balance, right? However, we have three brains, as you know, and I know we're just out of time here, but as you've learned in class, right, we have three different brains that operate at any given time: our survival brain, our tribal brain, and our thinking brain. So whenever something happens immediately and we feel that we may be harmed somehow, we immediately jump into, you know, a survival brain, maybe, like, you know, your hand is on the hot stove, so you react without thinking, or the emotional brain, you know, what does this mean for me? Will I fit? Will I belong? Will I be harmed? Will I be kicked out?
Mm-hmm.
And it takes, so instantly we can step into one of those brains, and we're not really who we are, our thinking selves. And as we relax and as time goes on, then our thinking brain comes in and goes, you know what, I didn't really mean that.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So just be gentle with yourself, dear.
Thank you so much, Patricia. Well, I will talk with you tonight. Have a good day.
Okay, you too. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Take care. Again, that was Patricia Irwin. She is the author of The Wave Riders, The Creativity and Mood Spectrum. You can find her website at thewaveriders.com. I'm your host, Marie Bernard. Coming up in just a moment here on CITR is Parts Unknown with DJ Chris Arific. Stick around for that. And I'm going to close the show with a song by Theta Phoenix from her new album, Legacy. It's called This Journey, and I want to dedicate this show to my dear friend, whose memory of the good times will remain with me, and that is the image I'm going to keep of her in my mind. So I want to send all my love to you. Hug your loved ones a little closer and a little tighter today, because every moment with them is precious. I want to send you so much love. Be well. I love you so much. Namaste.
We never know where this journey will lead. We've just got to do our best, 'cause we created with our choices, and the spirits do the rest. And no matter what happens to me, I trust this life, for I love this journey, for I love this life. Such a gift that I've been given, and I can remember I dream that there is a purpose to this whole thing, and then I choose to let go, 'cause maybe the purpose is just to let it. Joy.